First of all, you don't know me.
We're all about that high school drama girl, all about them high school queens. We'll take you for a ride in our comic girl,
drama girl,
cheering for the right team.
Drama queens, drama queens,
the smart girl, rough girl, fashion, but you're tough girl. You could sit with us, girl.
Drama queens, drama queens, drama queens. Drama, drama queens, drama queens.
Ladies, gentlemen, listeners, friends, last week we said, where is the redemption? And it turns out that this week it is in episode 17, Spirit in the Night. It's the Secret Sparkle Classic, and it aired originally April 6th, 2004. Oh my God, we got our show back this week, guys.
Yes.
Thank God, we had so much fun watching this. Look at this. We took notes again. We were so happy.
Guys, I texted Brian Greenberg in the middle of the episode. I took a screen grab and I was like, you are a doll, baby.
Adorable.
Guys, I loved this episode. Yeah,
Me too.
Was this one of our first field trips?
I think it was.
We took this on the road. Ooh, danger.
Myrtle Beach.
On the road.
Myrtle Beach, baby. That was fun.
It was fun.
And Haley got to be a cheerleader for the first time, which was so exciting.
The introduction. And the first time Brooke ever called Haley, Haley.
Oh, that's right. Oh my gosh.
We also had Lee was involved. You know, last episode was the first time that we had seen Antoine in the high school.
And now we're seeing Lee
in social settings, which is important. Mm-hmm. Our secondary characters were really like vital part of our story.
Bevan, Tim.
Yes.
Poor Teresa.
Teresa, Daniela, our girls, all of the boys on the basketball team. I also will say to everybody at home with us today that there were some very close to spit takes when Brooke screams, "Hey, lips, come here."
It's mouth, he said.
I was like, yeah. She is such a little tyrant at the opening of this episode.
And no.
And you learn that it's because she's really leaning into the escapism of the control and the choreography and the project to fix her sadness.
And
it's kind of an amazing framework, you know, with the cheer competition and with the game, for everybody to confront sort of the edges of their comfort, even for Lucas and for Nathan. I mean, God, Lucas seems like himself again. And Lucas and Nathan get into the whole leaning on each other to learn the fadeaway. We're learning sports terms over here, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Sports.
There are just good things happening in this episode.
And Brooke and Peyton's friendship rekindling, and then kind of, I know it was like a little fumbly at the end there still, but I just was so happy to see. I missed it, even for like a couple episodes.
I realized is that we have spoken a number of times about how quickly our characters fall in love and how quickly they like shack up and like, you know, couple up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When other shows do the whole, you know, like long drawn out thing, and I realize that in our show, the friendships are the will they or won't they relationships. Because Lucas and Nathan, the whole episode, I'm like, are they friends? Are they not friends? And that's been going on for like all season. You know, they've got this shared thing of hating Dan, but it's will they or won't they? And now with Brooke and Peyton, it's the same thing. It's will they or won't they? And so I can see why a lot of our fan base has questioned if like the true romanticism of the show isn't involved in the friendships, you know? Like that has been something that people have talked about for years.
Big time.
Yeah. I actually think, gosh, that's such an interesting...
Maybe that's our secret.
I think it is, you guys, because when you think about how long it takes all the girls to become friends, the sort of flip-flopping over the guy for Brooke and Peyton, I think that's why everyone's always gone, the relationships are cool, but the friendships are what matter to us, because they're slow and they're honest.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Can I, as much as I love the seriousness of our friendship conversation, can I just steer back into the sizzling romance of what is happening in this episode between Karen and Larry.
Oh my gosh.
Guys.
So much sizzle.
If we could just make it weirder, that'd be great. It was like,
oh,
hey,
no.
Let's do this love triangle between the kids and then let's have their parents hook up. Like, I just, I get that it's a small town. Like, I fully understand, but the whole incestuous of it, nature of it just gives me hives. I'm like, ugh.
Totally get it.
But there were major vibes there.
I have to acknowledge, like, vibes. It's pretend. Those aren't our real parents, but it still creeps me out in a way that feels mortifying. Like when they came on the screen and they were flirting, I was like, oh God, Dad, what are you doing?
Everyone just says if Clueless got away with it, it's okay now.
I guess.
I will say, I am currently watching season 3 of Sex Education. It is my happy show. And there is a whole thing between Otis's mom and Ola's dad, and Otis and Ola used to date. And like, this is apparently a dynamic in small towns on television. Yeah. But I felt that. I mean, Hillary, I need you to know, like, clearly neither Karen or Larry is one of Brooke's parents. And when that started happening on screen, I was like, what are our parents doing?
Yeah, it felt crazy.
Like, because I think that, you know, for us, they really seemed like the worldly, know-it-all adults.
We're
on
the responsible ones.
Yeah. When we were little babies who were messy. And it to see them have like genuine chemistry, which now as adults we know you can have with your friends, with your coworkers. It doesn't actually have to be romantic. But at the time, it felt really real, and I'm having feelings.
So I was trying to figure out like the backstory, because okay, so we know that Karen was a Tree Hill Raven cheerleader, which is exciting, like for her to cop to in this episode. We know
from a former captain to another, by the way, Karen was the captain.
She called it. That's one of those subtle like drops where you're like, I was captain. You know, like no big deal, but I was.
She's like, we're the same girl. I came to check on you because my son's an idiot, and also to let you know, I'm like you.
Yeah, well, but we also know from previous episodes that Whitey knows Peyton's mom because she was a cheerleader. Now Karen had Lucas at 18, right? And so I have to imagine, Peyton's parents were older, so if they were like, you know, a lot of grades ahead, that means that Larry, Peyton's dad, would have potentially also been of the Tree Hill lineage. And so if they're like class of 88, you know what I mean? Like I'm trying to figure out.
I wish they had known each other. Wouldn't that have been nice?
Yeah, it's like, how do they not know each other in this small town if they all went to the same school unless he's significantly older? I don't know.
Well, I wonder if maybe Peyton's mom and Karen were the same age. Ooh. But then when they went off to college, Peyton's mom met Larry like as a freshman and maybe he was a senior and they had Peyton. So Karen knew of him, but never knew him.
Is that a story point? Peyton's mom grew up in Tree Hill? I forgot.
Yeah, because remember when Whitey and Peyton are talking at the cemetery, Whitey's like, I knew your mama. You know, she'd be so proud of you. So I feel like she would, because they were old enough to adopt Peyton, I feel like she would have been a little bit older than Karen.
Oh, duh. Ellie.
But that kind of makes Larry sexy. He's like an older alumni as opposed to Keith, who she's grown up with. You know, Keith is like,
I just completely ignored the reality of our show and started writing a rom-com. I was like, they met in college. They had a baby. I'm like, wait, Peyton is adopted. Like, I really went for it. But I actually think there's something really interesting there of a familiarity, but then also when you lose people, when you move on, and because Larry's always gone, he's always out on a boat, like he's back to be with Peyton now. She's 16, he doesn't want to miss anything. Karen just went away and doesn't want to miss anymore. I wonder if they're connecting on some moment in their lives.
I don't like it. It's gross.
I thought it was
It still makes me feel like a kid, you guys. Like when we watch it, I'm just grossed out. I don't like it.
There's also, there's something really cool that happens with Karen that isn't romantic, but that is deeply tender at the beginning of the episode with Deb and Karen at the cafe. And she's like, sweetheart, you have to stop cleaning the counters. Like, I get that you're stressed. And you realize that in the last episode where we were in the Upside Down and everything was awful.
In the Upside Down.
We were in the Upside Down. It was bad. But Karen said to Deb, like, why don't we be partners? And Deb said, I can't. It seems as though now they are. And Deb is, you know, confessing her fear and her heartbreak to Karen, who just says, your son's going to forgive you. You're a good person.
Yeah.
I liked that moment.
Those are important moments for us to see. And I don't know what Karen's basing her whole, he'll forgive you thing. You know, it feels like foreshadowing in a way, like has Karen does something that Lucas is going to get mad about? Like, you know what I mean?
I don't know. I feel like it was just like a device. Like they needed to have a character who's had a sane voice. Go ahead.
It feels weird that Deb doesn't have a world of her own. That's what feels weird to me is that she's confessing everything into her ex's ex. And like Deb has been a successful businesswoman.
Yeah.
Why doesn't she have a world of her own?
Why doesn't she have friends?
We are taking a turn with Deb because she, when we started out, remember how impressed we were with her boundaries, with her sense of self, her sense of worth and identity and all this stuff, in spite of being married to this man who's clearly abusive to her in so many ways. How did the turn happen? How are we?
You know why I feel like it's happening? Because in the world of the show, Deb's world has been outside of Tree Hill. She travels for work. She has a big job. She works with nonprofits out. And what the writers are not going to do is bring in a bunch of Deb's friends. So they're going to bring Deb home where she's alone, and they're going to make her friends with Karen. This is because they don't want to hire 5 more actors. It's unfortunate for Barbara's skill. But what I like that it gives us is the one person who isn't judging Deb, because Dan has held this over her and threatened to ruin her life.
Yeah.
Nathan is making his mother the sinner rather than his father. And everything feels misogynistic. Again, in the writing, everybody relax. And and Deb leaning on Karen. Karen is the only other person who's ever been in a relationship with Dan. And she is like, are you crazy? Of course your son is gonna forgive you. Like, it almost seems like Karen isn't even going to tolerate Deb's self-flagellation, her self-criticism.
That tracks, yeah.
And I like that, that Karen's like, of course you went looking elsewhere. That guy's an asshole. You know? That feels nice.
Have you guys ever done that in real life? Have you ever, like, gotten close to the devil, you know? Do you know what I mean? Like, I dated somebody on One Tree Hill, and when we broke up, I ended up dating his old best friend. And, like, only because it was the only other person that knew what it was like to be disappointed by that person. Do you know what I mean?
Are you really asking me that question? Like, we've all done this.
It's like, it's a safe zone.
I know you've done it. We've all done it.
Because it's like, we can talk about it. You know, it's like, I can't talk about this really frustrating, embarrassing thing with anyone but the person who also loves you, you know, or loved, past tense, you.
Or the person who's also been betrayed. Like, we share that we were both betrayed by this person. Yeah. I actually think that's quite common.
Yeah.
Whether or not anybody talks about it. It's the same reason that, like, in a completely different world, not in the closed circuit world of a show landscape, but think about, like, people who meet in, you know, when people who meet in rehab, they're both suffering the same wound, and they can sometimes have a commiseration that gives them something that nothing else can.
Commiserate friendship. That's a strong bond.
Listen, sometimes that's a bad idea, and sometimes it's a good idea. And I don't know how to tell you how to tell the difference.
Listen, if we hate all the same things, chances are we're going to be friends. That's what I'm saying.
I love that. Can we all talk about something that we all hate, but God, we love to hate him? Sweet Angel Paul playing horrible Dan Scott
with the cardboard cutout. Oh my God, the cardboard cutout where he's grinning.
Oh my God.
Joy, was it you saying that the little one still lives? No, Sophia, you were saying that.
I have it. Guys, I have the miniature cutout. Of course I do.
I'm going to ask Paul right now. I'm going to text him and ask him.
Text him.
Okay.
Paul Carey, the way he played that scene, and this is where you know Paul is the sweetest human and he's such a good actor. He played that scene with the subtle, like, pulsing energy of camp. Like in Scary Movie, where they're making fun of Scary Movie.
Yes.
Paul is actually making fun of Dan Scott while, like, puffing up his chest as Dan Scott. It is so funny. And then when Craig Sheffer throws the basketball at the cutout, it's poetry.
And he hits him square in the balls, too. Like, it hits him just right in the crotch.
And it's a oneer. Like, they didn't do it as an insert. It actually happened. And it is poetic, comedic justice.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good.
Joy, what do you remember of this episode? Because you had never been a cheerleader in high school, right?
Yeah.
I was for like one day and then I went, wait, this is not for me.
I want to know about that one day. Tell me about that one day.
I don't know. I think I just signed up for cheerleading and I just tried it and I thought, I don't know. I really don't know. I just, I wasn't into it. I just didn't care. I didn't care.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was. I could have cared about soccer or, I don't know, maybe softball because their strategy and like, I don't know. I guess for whatever reason, I just didn't care. I tried it. But then I did do the sequel to Bring It On. And we had cheerleading camp for 3 weeks ahead of time with professional cheerleaders. They came in and we trained in that gym on Hollywood and Highland, the giant church at the corner of Hollywood and Highland.
Wow.
Yeah. Franklin and Highland. So we trained in there for 3 weeks. And by the end of it, you know, we were being thrown up in the air and doing lifts, like full extension lifts on these guys' hands. And I mean, I was like, it was so cool. It was a really fun experience. So I had a little bit of that in behind me and dance training because I grew up dancing and stuff. So I felt pretty comfortable doing all of our stuff that we did. We were laughing during the routine because, you know, the choreography was mediocre and, you know, we were all obviously doing the best we could and we were good for actors to be doing cheer, you know, cheering.
We were filming 18 hours a day. When are you going to learn a routine?
I know.
That's all I'm hearing you say when you're like, we had 3 weeks of 12 hours a day of rehearsal to learn this one routine. I'm like, interesting. Cause they taught us our routine like a day before.
During lunch. Yeah, exactly.
Oh God. We'd get 30 minutes and they'd be like, come on girls. And
cheer
we were like, guys, we don't know it. We don't know it. And they were like, you'll be great. And we watched, and Hillary, I think you said it. You were like, look, every shot's a close up. Cause there's no wide shot where we're all in sync.
No group shot.
We
can't
had
do it.
No rehearsal time.
Lots of torsos.
It looks when they do the shots where there's more than one person, it looks like the moves are staggered on purpose. And I promise you at home, they were not.
No, whoever was behind the person in the front was just following the move of the person in front
of them. Oh, that's
like
what's
a
happening
second
now?
Later.
You guys, I did competitions cheer squad. I did go to NCAA cheerleading camp and I made the national squad and I was
amazing.
Like a super cheerleader. Damn it.
I love that.
And it,
damn it,
killed me to not be good on What's Real. It killed me that like even I was struggling with those moves because I was like,
it's not fair. It's not fair for them to not give us the proper rehearsal time and then throw us in and be like, just move your bodies and like basically throw your arms in this direction. We'll shoot around you.
I'd been cheerleading since I was 9 years old. And,
man, we could have done it amazing.
We could have.
If we'd had a couple of weeks of rehearsal, we would have killed.
Yeah. No, never. And so then on top of it, they're like, we're going to put you in front of 1,000 extras. And we were like, okay, good story. The extras were heckling us, you guys. They were laughing in our faces.
They were, because they were all serious cheer squads. And they were like, oh my God, these girls.
Yeah. On top of all of that, we're getting the pressure of like, pull it together. We're wasting film. We were still shooting on film. So pull it together. We're shooting on film. You're wasting material. And then on top of that, pull it together. Your show's going to get canceled. We have this big corporate endorsement from Secret Sparkle. They're watching. You can't fuck this up. Like,
I was like, I will sparkle my forehead in deodorant if you need me to. Just make stop making me dance.
Let's go to the secret sparkle of it all.
Oh, man.
Explain to the kids at home who don't know what the secret sparkle was.
So the secret sparkle classic was the cheer competition. No, it wasn't. It was made up. It was made
totally
up.
Pretend.
It was like it was basically nationals, what Hillary's talking about. But it was the TV version, and it was the TV version because I guess they got secret sparkle. At the time, they made a glitter deodorant, and they got secret to pay, you know, to quote, endorse.
You guys, they made a glitter deodorant.
Yeah, let's not blow past that. Glitter deodorant.
Okay, guys, I love glitter. I don't know why you want to hate on it so much. I've never not bought a sequin, anything, jumpsuit, pant, dress. I don't know what you want me to tell you. Like, most days I dress like a teenage boy. However, if I see, I just moved to Canada and I packed 4 suitcases and in one of them is a pair of sequin pants.
God bless.
So damn it.
Of course. Of course. Just the idea of drawing attention to your armpit. Just like, check it out, guys. It's not hair. It's glitter.
And it was before lasers, too. It was like before we could get rid of hair.
Guys, would you rather have glitter or hair? I say glitter. I don't know what you want from me. But like the funniest part is, and now that I'm hearing you guys talk about this, I vaguely remember them basically saying, oh, no, we're going to be fine. All these girls are cheerleaders. Mm-hmm. Joy did Bring It On. Hillary competed in nationals. They thought we didn't need rehearsal time.
Oh,
and it's
gosh.
Like, no, you get no. to nationals or you do Bring It On by rehearsing all day, every day
all
for
day.
Literal weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
how. So we had really sparkly armpits and terrible choreography is the point of the story.
Well, let's talk about who had great choreography, and that is Marvin McFadden.
Oh, sweetie.
Wow. I loved that moment so much. That was so fun. I love, God bless Lee Norris for learning all that
He's
and going
perfect.
For it. He always throws himself in 100%, and I
oh,
love that
like
about him.
Oh, and like shaking his ass.
They put
he
it in
so
our
good.
Face that he didn't have a problem learning the choreography, but all
they
of
did. I don't remember that. That's so funny.
Also,
he also had a lot less to do in this episode, though. I mean, we were working all the time and filming other episodes.
I was going to say, that's rude, because Lee only worked 2 days in this episode, and we worked 8.
Well,
so,
yeah.
His days of rehearsal really paid off. His choreography was flawless. When Haley says, what's a diagonal? And he claps and does the hands. It was such comedic gold. I know I said this earlier, but it bears repeating. I really feel like we got our show back.
Yeah.
And even with the boys, like we've been saying, you know, again, it's in the writing. Bad behavior was being modeled. And it's almost like, I almost feel like they took it so far in the last episode that maybe, and maybe I'm giving them too much credit, I don't know. But maybe even the writers were like, whoa, that was a lot. And suddenly in this episode, you have this beautiful storyline of will they or won't they with the brothers, and Lucas and Nathan go to the river court. And did you guys notice that this is when we started lighting the whole city on the other
yes.
side? So it was like twinkle
yes, it was
lights.
So beautiful. Oh
and
my
Lucas
gosh.
And Lucas is trying to teach Nathan the fadeaway. And they're just these boys. They feel like boys again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having this experience. And then when you get to Charlotte or Raleigh or wherever this place was, wherever we were for the deodorant glitter. There's this
Myrtle Beach.
Gorgeous Myrtle Beach. There it is.
No,
there's
was it Myrtle
gorgeous,
Beach?
Gorgeous. We don't know. Guys,
we don't
we're just
know.
Pulling, we're pulling rabbits out of hats.
We were
at this
in a
point.
Hot tub, kids.
The hot tub was fun, but there's that gorgeous, super wide shot. It feels like a movie of Lucas and Nathan walking into that gymnasium.
Yeah.
And you realize it's just these like two young boys up against the world, and it's touching.
Those were the moments that reminded me of what was the movie that Mike Tolan and Brian Robbins had done together? They had done a basketball movie before they sold this show.
Wasn't that the movie Antoine did? Coach Carter.
Yeah.
And Antoine was in it.
That's right. And it was so beautifully shot, and those big epic moments of, you know, somehow it feels magical and intimate and huge all at the same time. And they did a great job. And there were a lot of shots in this episode that reminded me of that vibe, which is what the show was sold on. That's what our show was sold on. Yeah. That vibe, that image. So we got our show back.
My favorite shot of the entire episode was the hallway shot where you see the chaperones go through and make sure everyone's in bed and then all the kids duck out of their room. Because I full on remember those nights going on field trips in high school. I went on every field trip imaginable. Student government, theater, sports, like whatever. If I could leave my house, I went on that trip. And I loved like hotels. And we did. We would sneak out. We wouldn't do anything bad. We certainly weren't going to strip clubs, but we'd go to each other's rooms and stuff. And it was, I remember going on a government field trip. And like, it was when Lifetime did If These Walls Could Talk. Do you remember that? Do you remember that?
Yes.
It was all about lesbians. It was like, you know, the first time that those relationships were being profiled on television. And I was into it, like fascinated.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in my room. I'm in a hotel. We have cable, unlike I did at home. And my sponsors call our hotel room. And I answer the phone. And I said, hello. And they're like, Hillary, turn the channel. And I was like, what? They're like, we can hear the sex scenes from your room. Oh, sorry, guys. Anyway.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Listen, you got to like go out of town and sow your oats.
Totally. I also remember us filming that stuff, and I can't remember if they had a bullhorn and they would yell or if they had an air horn at the end of the hall. They needed a really loud noise to get everyone to open the door at the same time, and how funny it was when we get it wrong. And it was just such a charming behind the scenes experience, but to see it on camera, because again, you know, for everybody watching along with us, we filmed this stuff for hours and hours. So when we see it cut together and the comedy is like chef's kiss, the timing is perfect, you go, oh my God, we really did it right. And it's so sweet to then have this moment where you're like, ruh-roh. And when everybody gets in trouble and Barry is screaming, how could you? How am I supposed
hilarious.
To? And you realize he's not yelling at the team. He's yelling at Karen and Larry. Ugh,
that was so gold. Good.
It was perfect. It was gold. I love that we kept our basketball players and our cheerleaders for the run of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was really special. I loved that they really made an effort to do that.
It was so cool. And this was a cool episode too, because, you know, so many of the gals on our squad were our friends, like some of the dearest people in our lives. And this was the first time with Teresa, you know, getting chicken pox. Ugh, I hated Brooke being like, cover up the zit. But it's like, okay, it's the joke for the chicken pox, fine, whatever.
It's okay. Wah, wah. And there's a lot of Victoria in there too, which was kind of fun to see in Brooke.
That's true.
God, you're right.
That's a good point. Joy with the zinger.
Yeah.
But like seeing her more on camera, seeing Daniela more with her like that perfectly just shocked face when the other girl is mean to us downstairs. Bevan getting her first line on camera. It was just so special.
Remember when they named her Bevan on the call sheet? Like they were like, what do we call her?
Yeah.
She can only be Bevan.
They're like, give her a character name.
What was her first line? What did she say? It was something snarky to Brooke.
Okay, so when we had the cheerleading practice,
I just
on the
wrote
quad,
down Bevan's first line. I didn't write down what it was.
Well, so when we were shot that scene on the quad, part of my mortification and all of this cheerleading is that my real friends from high school visited during this episode, and they came like, cause all my friends were still in college. And so they came during, it must've been spring break because this aired in April. And so we only had a couple weeks between when we would shoot and when things would air. So my girlfriends from high school all came down and watched us film that cheerleading practice on the quad. And I just remember them being like, that's not accurate. You know, like real bitchy about it. But that's when like Bevan had her first line. And, you know, for her, that turned into a big storyline. And now You know, mm-hmm. we can talk, you know, Bevan's got a really successful podcast. Bevan runs her own business now. She was doing SoulCycle forever, mm-hmm. and she's got her own business called Recess, which yep. is a fitness program. And she moved to Wilmington after living in New York City for years. Daniela is like in London. Is she yeah. living in London with her twins yeah. or something?
Daniela is in London with three kids. What? I was at Daniela's wedding. Oh, it was God. An utter dream. Aww. My favorite, I actually just have to shout out Daniela and her sweet husband, Bryn, because you guys will remember this. When Daniela and Bryn started dating, we were all in North Carolina and he's English. Mm-hmm. So he would walk into a bar and be like, you know, in his cute accent, like, oh, hello. And people were like, wow, where are you from? And then they moved to London. And everyone is British, yeah. duh. And Daniela walks into a bar and goes, hey, y'all. With and all the Brits accent. Are like, oh, my, where are you from? And he was like, oh, I've done myself a terrible disservice. The thing that made me feel cool makes my wife catnip to everyone in London.
Hilarious.
And
he was like,
and it's just, it's the cutest role reversal. And they are just the most delightful, wonderful couple. And their kids are unbelievable. And it's like, yeah, man, we were all just a bunch of kids pretending to be cheerleaders. And now we're grown-ups with careers. Who knew?
So Brett Claywell and Sarah Edwards, who played Teresa. So Tim yeah. and Sarah were dating in real life when we were doing this. And so that was a fun mm-hmm. thing because they were like the hometown kids and they oh, were yeah. the ones to like give us tours. And I remember like going around on Halloween with Sarah. She was just like a police officer. She was the hottest thing in town. Like, yeah. oh my God, yeah. her shorts could not have been shorter, but she was a smoke show. And so I think that's why they felt so comfortable making fun of her in this episode because she clearly yeah. knew that she was a babe.
Well, she's heartbreakingly pretty.
And so and then nice.
She's like, okay, yeah, you can put stuff all over my face. It's fine.
It's fine.
And the rest of us were like, wow, what must it be like to feel that confident? Cool. That's cool.
But she's a mom now too. She just had babies. It's fun to like keep up with everybody and see our evolution and know that we were all yeah. punk kids together, you know, pretending to be high schoolers yeah. forever. And now we're moms.
Forever.
That's what we do now.
It's cute. I will say, speaking of confidence, I loved when we were having that sweet moment in the hot tub in the pool. Mm-hmm. And Haley walks out for the first time in the Tree Hill Ravens
so cute.
Cheerleading costume. And Brooke says, Tudor girl, you look bitchin'.
Bitchin'.
And Haley doesn't shy away or make a bashful thing that girls, like in the Amy Schumer skit, like the girls are like, oh, this? No. Haley's like, yeah, I kind of do, don't I? And I was like,
I love it. Own it.
It was so nice.
It was so fun to put on a cheerleading uniform and feel like I was part of the group, you know, and feel like just, I don't know. I mean, Haley was not supposed to be a cheerleader. She was like something else. And so to be able to play with you guys for a little bit and do that, I thought that was really fun. It was new. And to get dressed up and put my hair in a ponytail and, you know, all the little like fake eyelashes. And it was fun. I loved that.
Joy, did it make a difference in how you felt on set once you joined the squad? Because you got to sit in the bleachers with Craig, which was also pleasing.
Also fun. Yeah.
But
yeah, it did. I mean, I think I've always been very uncomfortable most of the time in life, always. So I'm like, only just about 5 years ago, I started turning a corner and being like, wait, I don't give a
I'm fine.
but, you know, so I think no matter where I was, there was always an element of being uncomfortable and overanalyzing and all that. But I had fun. And yeah, I think being able to feel like I was a part of the popular kids crew a little bit more and, you know, hanging out with all of you guys and being able to stay after, be a part of the cheer rehearsal. So I didn't feel like I was missing out on something you guys all got
Baby,
to go
you weren't
do together.
Missing anything.
Well, now I know, but you know, back then it was like, oh man, they get to bond because they have their cheer rehearsals and they have this little club. And so that was fun to be able to be a part of that. Mm. I thought it was also cool for the storyline too. I liked showing that Haley, you know, the Haley feeling torn between her friendship with Lucas and making sure that she was making time for her boyfriend. And
that was so adult. You being like, this is how it's going to be, Lucas, was fantastic. Like,
yes. And you know what else I loved about it? Haley saying to him, I don't spend more time with Nathan than you spent with Brooke. Like,
yeah.
She, without saying it, she calls him on his basically,
double standard.
Yeah, the double standard of him saying, you're not allowed to change, but I am. And she's like, that's not cool. You did this. I'm doing this. We're growing up. And in a way, her saying that kind of diffuses the whole thing. And then by the end of the episode, everyone's being friends.
Yeah.
It's such a phenomenal way to like let the air out of the balloon. And you did it so tenderly, but with a boundary. And
yeah,
it was
she's owning her journey, which I loved about her. I loved that she was unabashedly like, you know, it's nerve wracking. It's scary. I'm not sure how to do this. I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't, you know, we're both stepping into this thing where we used to be kind of the losers on the outskirts. And now we're both in with the popular kids and trying to find our way. And there's drama. But she owned her journey in it. She didn't make apologies for herself. She didn't try and please everybody. She just was like, I'm just going one day at a time. And this is where I am. And I'm owning it.
Yeah,
I love that. I have a theory. I think that Haley is a time traveler and is actually from the future because she's the only person who is exhibiting like 2021 values. Do you know what I mean?
It's true.
Yes.
Like, you are Rachel McAdams in the time traveler's wife.
Oh my God.
I love it.
You're a time traveler.
That's the only thing One Tree Hill was missing, time travel.
Honestly, we jumped every single shark but a time machine. So, guys.
That would have been the most amazing final episode, by the way. We all climb into a DeLorean.
That's why Peyton didn't come to Brooke's wedding. She was time traveling, guys. She was like a Bill and Ted, like in a phone booth.
We need a reboot special just for this. Just to time travel. Why not? Fuck it.
That's so good.
Wait. But comedy aside, I actually do have to say, watching this, I wish we'd had time to watch the episodes when they were airing. Because we never got to see them because
we were working
on set.
What were we on Tuesdays at 8 p.m.? We were like working.
We were working. But in watching Haley assert herself and own that she deserves to have experiences of trial and error, I'm like, oh man, if anybody had taught me that when I was a kid, that would have been cool.
But would we have listened? I mean, that's part of youth. That's why youth is wasted on the young, right? Like if we had known, but even if we had known, would we have listened? Because I sure as hell know I got a lot of advice that I never listened to and wish I had, but I didn't want to listen, you know?
Well,
so I think that's part of the journey.
Haley is described by Lucas, and this is like the part where we're all like, oh, that guy. He's like, she used to be a totally original Haley. When he's talking to Nathan.
And we were like,
what the heck?
Like,
the heck?
You used to be totally original Lucas, you big Lucas. Shoot.
All I hear is she used to only talk to you, and now she talks to other people, and you don't like it.
he's feeling a little, like boys do that, right? They feel extraterritorial.
You know who doesn't do that?
Yeah.
Jake Jagielski.
That's right.
Jake Jagielski is a dad.
If Jake Jagielski could walk on water, I think that would be in One Tree Hill. Like I said, we've jumped every other shark.
Okay, time travel, walking on water. Yeah. We have to keep a list for what might come someday.
He is the person who's allowed to be perfect. Do you know what I mean? Like there are no flaws with Jagielski, which can be irritating. He'll be a bit of a martyr in season 3 when he tells Peyton to go be with Lucas, which is super frustrating.
That's right.
But for right now, the fact that he's like next door to the girls and the door opens up and he's like not a threat at all. It's like, oh my God,
love
Jake's
it.
Next door. You're so fun. You know?
Yeah. Yay.
And he's not talking shit about his ex who just showed up on his doorstep in the last episode.
How did we not open the episode with that moment? That's so crazy that
he doesn't want to tell any of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not a shit talker.
I think maybe he's a time traveler too.
Oh.
Could be.
Oh.
Yeah, and I know Nikki's a secret, but I just, I don't know. It was such a good cliffhanger that to open the episode and not be right back.
There was no deodorant in that scene.
Nikki right. just goes, pow, pow. That's with right. sparkle pits.
Sparkle pits. Oh my gosh. That's the name of this podcast episode.
Yes. Sparkle pits. You're welcome. Actually, there's a moment in this whole cheerleading storyline which feels really important to call out for our fans and listeners.
What?
Because it made us cackle. There's a lot of very great comedy. And I will say again, show's back on track. And I know I keep repeating it, but I'm real excited. Get over it. The writers gave like a lot of good comedy. And I feel lucky. Like as Brooke, I got a lot of good comedy in this episode.
Zingers, man.
It's a lot of like it's her anxiety. It's like, we got to win this. We're going to go Tonya Harding. It's like, she's so
Tonya Harding on that girl.
It's so ridiculous, but it's so charming. And the comedy was great. And then there is a moment that is clearly written for comedy, but it's ridiculous because Peyton brings Haley in and is like, she's going to fill in. And it's like, this isn't going to work. And then it's like, we're going to stay up all night. We need black coffee. Sleep is our enemy. Tudor girl, we're going to have to do something about that hair.
Oh my God.
Right?
And the three of us started cackling. Because in this episode, out of maybe any episode ever, Joy and I have the exact same hair. Yeah. You guys, it is the same color. Yep. It is the same, length. Yep. It is in a straight full blowout.
Oh, yeah. So same style. I'm like,
we got to do something about that hair. And clearly mine also. Like, it's so ridiculous.
I love it. I love this about Brooke. I mean, Brooke could get away with it. Brooke could be the one who could be totally wild and irrational and crazy, but you still loved her because you saw the girl in her. And that was so endearing. And, you know, you always, it was like your best friend who's like overdramatic and wild and crazy, but you still love her because you see the little girl in her that you just love so much. And that never goes away. You know, the wonder that's in her, that never goes away. So even when she's barking at people and being, you know, snide and whatever, then in the next moment she can turn around and smile and be like, oh my God, I don't know why I'm being so crazy today. I'm sorry. I love you. Okay, bye.
That's so Brooke. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's exactly it. And I think because some of it, like on the page, it's like, Haley, we have to fix your hair.
Yeah.
And then we're standing there and we have the same hair. So I think inadvertently,
I wish they'd have played that. I wish we had been able to look at each other and like,
to be like, but the ridiculousness of what they would write that wasn't real, I think gave me as a performer the space to lean into like, I got to make this endearing because it's utterly ridiculous.
Well, dude, your pep talk right before the competition where you're like, Teresa's last words to us were, this sucks and this will suck if we lose. Like, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah. Because it's not, perfectly. Guys, we have to do this for Teresa.
No.
Oh my God.
No, this sucks.
Oh my God.
And it did suck. I promise.
Yeah.
You guys, we didn't even get sparkle deodorant, like, gifted to us.
No, because our dance sucked, Joy. Maybe if we danced a little harder, we would have gotten some sparkle pits.
We would have gotten some gift bags,
that's
damn
hilarious.
It. They were like, send them home, don't give them.
Do they still make it? Is this something I'm going to have to Google right now?
Are we going to have to buy it on eBay?
I do not want 15 or 18-year-old deodorant. That is not...
I would like to put one stick in a shadow box frame next to my teeny tiny cutout of Paul Johansson as Dan Scott.
Trick or treat. Gross. What I also noticed in this episode, which felt like a chick did not write, is that Brooke and Peyton are at odds, like crazy at odds.
Yeah.
And the last episode was like, I hate your face. I'm not your friend. Don't look at me. And even though she still hates me, we still have to be in all the same shots together. And so, like, we're next to each other. Like, I'm literally on top of you in every single shot, hovering like a psychopath. Just like, you don't love me now, but you will. You know, like I'm straight stalking you.
But that's what you say at the end. And actually, I thought maybe
maybe that makes up for it. The thing you're talking about,
which it's fine.
Now that I think about it, is creepy. But I like what they wrote, which was when I say it's essentially the come down, right?
Yeah.
Like, look, it was fun to have something to focus on, but you did this horrible thing and we're not friends. And I thought that line was so simple and so poignant. And the way you delivered it was so beautiful. And you just said, look, maybe you're not my friend, but I'm your friend. And I'm going to prove it to you. And I was like, oh.
It's great.
Oh, so many people have wanted to hear that.
Yeah.
From people they've loved and been hurt by and probably haven't. And I loved that moment.
I like that moment. It's, you know, the Brooke Peyton relationship is so complex. And so I like when they give us those little just really simple moments. You know, like if another teenager said that, when teenagers say vulnerable things like that, that's a risk. That's like
special.
A big deal. And so our show doesn't have to be about like, I'm in the hospital and I almost died. Like those little moments in parking lots are just as important. And so I really like that scene and I like the Brooke Peyton journey.
You guys want to talk about some gossip?
Yeah, I love gossip.
Oh, what's the gossip?
Well, the gossip is that, well, as you know, and you wouldn't bring it up because it's up to me to bring it up, but I was dating someone someone from Wilmington while we were filming this episode. And I don't think I was engaged yet. Was that? No, I think
it was on the way and we didn't like it.
It was that guy, though.
We didn't like it.
I know.
We made a signal to be like, are we talking about this? But you're talking about it. We're here.
I'm talking about
it.
No, I mean, I knew it was up to me to bring up, but that's what I mostly remember from behind the scenes of this, you know, Sparkle Classic or whatever, this trip, because I think he like worked a lot in Myrtle Beach or something. Anyway, it came down to hang out, but like, I never heard the behind the scenes, like how you guys all felt about it, what you all thought, because I was like isolating myself. So I don't know what happened. And
well,
how
you were like dating him, like you were in the throes of romance all I remember is this dude showing up and coming to our hair and makeup trailer and all of us looking at each other like, who's this guy? Cause he was very territorial out of the gates. And we were like, well, who is this? She's ours. Like, this is our person and we haven't vetted you and we don't know you.
And I don't know why I was like, come on in, the hair and makeup. I mean, I had been around this business long enough to know that you don't like have your friends and family just come hang out in the trailer.
Unless
usually
you want
for
us
long.
To rip them apart.
I know.
Maybe in the back of your mind, you wanted us to intervene.
Maybe I did. And I don't want to disparage anyone. He was a sweet guy, a good dude. He was handsome and successful. And, you know, there was nothing wrong with him. It was just that we were not the right match. Like, we were very different places in our journey, you know. And so it didn't work out. And that was as it should be. But I do know that everybody kind of didn't have a great vibe and was like a little concerned.
Like, Joy, we gave you a cheerleading uniform. You don't have to be with him. You can be with us.
Don't do it.
I know. It's so weird.
Hillary, this gave us a bridge because you didn't like what was happening in my personal life.
Sure didn't.
Either.
Sure didn't.
And this, us both hating Joy's boyfriend.
Oh, that's right. So we can talk
gave
about
us
this.
The bridge. And suddenly you were like, yeah, you know how to spot a bad situation? And I was like, maybe. And we were like trying to swim back toward each other. And this was kind of our spot. Anyway.
I'm so glad that I could be a bridge for you guys.
Listen, I admit
my bad choices
to having firm opinions about things. And my firm opinions about Sophia.
You've never been wrong.
My firm opinions about Sophia's relationship and my firm opinion about Joy's relationship maybe didn't make me the nicest person to be around. And so I apologize for that. But I also am glad that I pushed back a little bit because you both deserved better.
Oh, love you. That's what you want your girlfriends for. You know, you want people to say that.
And you know what I will say? Is that when you're young and you're new and you've like just hatched and you have goo behind your ears,
yeah.
You don't know, like you're either like a duckling or a bull in a china shop, you don't know how to communicate.
Yeah.
And for the tumult and the like good and the bad of trying to messily advocate for each other, what I like is that even when we couldn't hear it when we were babies, we always trusted each other. Even if we were mad, there was love.
Yeah.
And we always trusted each other. And so it's not lost on any of us that now, after all these years, like the first person any of us calls when we have any shit to talk about our life is each other. Because it's like, well, you saw the dumbest thing I ever did. You so you're not going to think this is that bad.
Yeah. Hey, remember that time I almost destroyed my life? You guys were there.
Yes. Well, let this be a lesson to you out there. You know, as a young person, if all your friends or, you know, a good chunk of your friends have red flags about your relationship, please listen.
Yeah.
Please take it seriously.
And that doesn't mean that the other person, the relationship, is like the worst or, you know, evil or anything. It just means it's like,
it might not be right.
Yeah. It just means it's not for you. Because here's what I'll say. There really is, and I don't mean this to be hyperbolic or saccharine or any of it. There is somebody for everybody.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you're young, you're not as attuned to the specificities of your puzzle pieces yet. So you're like, this almost fits. It's close. And it's like, it's actually not close if it doesn't fit. It's really not. It's a terrible idea. Houses that don't fit together fall down.
Like, and that's not to say you're never going to argue. You're never going to have things to work out.
No,
I mean, you are, there are a lot of things that, you know, when you partner up with somebody, you're meant to be kind of clashing up against each other in order to make each other better people.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
part of the journey of a relationship.
To expand.
Yeah. Yeah. To grow. Yeah. So it doesn't mean that there should never be a fight. Actually, I think if you're not fighting ever, you probably have a huge problem in your relationship.
You're sleeping with other people.
Yeah. Something's going on.
If you've never had an argument, one or both of you might be a serial killer. I don't know.
But yes, I agree. I agree with what you're saying.
But keep the asshole friend that tells you, I don't like your relationship. I don't like
yes.
it.
Yes.
I don't like it.
Do it.
Yeah. That's
yeah. Right. Because they love you.
They love you. And you know what's funny? It brings me to the circle back of these relationships, these friendships that are being pressure tested. Haley standing up for herself and saying, I deserve to grow to Lucas is a big deal. And Brooke leaning into, you know, a decade and a half of best friendship with Peyton and then saying, I'm still not ready to forgive you. It's actually, I mean, we said this in the last episode, like, why have we not seen Brooke crying about what happened to her?
Yeah.
And it's at the end of this episode.
Oh, yes.
Up those photos.
That beautiful shot with the mirror and the chandelier and those photos. Beautifully lit. Another great shot. I mean, gorgeously set up was that? Yes. I was so happy to see Brooke finally letting her guard down by herself and just letting it out. Oh, broke my heart.
It was so beautiful. And it's interesting, you know, when we get into this one, Dwayne Clark directed this so beautifully.
For you guys at home, I don't know, the children listening, Dick Clark is Dwayne Clark's dad. Dick Clark of you know, American Bandstand.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
And so he comes from like legendary pop culture. And I think he probably had a really good understanding of pop culture. And that's what our show was. It was like, how do teenagers communicate with each other? How do they communicate with music? How do they communicate in their like high school setting? His entire family lineage was, you know, based in that. It was their family business.
Yeah. Yeah. So that inherent just understanding of how to communicate, not just what's on the page, but more, I thought was so beautiful. And there's this ending that, again, feels like what we did best, where we go from this moment of Keith coming in and seeing Karen and Larry and going, oh, maybe I've been replaced, of
was Haley,
painful, of, you know, Brooke, Peyton, Lucas, Haley, Nathan, all of them in the parking lot, like the core five having this experience, Brooke going home, having her tears, Lucas taking the cord again, at Nathan's advice, by the way, to push through the pain, to start training. And then Nathan gets the apartment.
The apartment!
The is capitalized. Nathan gets the apartment where so many things take place over the years to come.
You guys, did you know anybody growing up that lived on their own?
I did.
No.
Well, you Joy did. Lived on her own. She was a
That's what I mean. I had my own apartment when I was a
That's
senior.
That's crazy. Like, how did that happen?
Well, she was on a TV show.
Yeah, I was in a series. I mean, financially, that's how that happened.
Didn't you have to move to New York, though, to do your series?
It was a soap. And the first year I did, my mom was terrified for me to have my own apartment. So I ended up living in my own place in Hackensack instead of moving to New York City, which was biggest mistake I could have made because I should have just moved to the city.
Awful.
The commute was bad, but also I was so isolated out there. I didn't have a bunch of friends in Hackensack, New Jersey. I had friends in my hometown that I was in, and then I had friends in the city, and she was just afraid of me being in New York, and, you know, I was 17 and whatever, you listen to your mom. So,
Joy, you sound like an old-timey character. Well, I didn't have a bunch of friends in Hackensack, New Jersey.
Hey, listen, if there's anybody in Hackensack that wants to be friends with Joy, it's not too late.
There you go. You're like, but I did go to Paramus and shop at the outlets. I love those outlets, by the way. Anybody in Paramus, lucky. Yes,
I love it. I love New Jersey and I loved Hackensack, but I should have had an apartment in New York City, which I eventually did. The next year I moved to New York. But why were we talking about that? Oh, yeah. So that's I was commuting back and forth. But I was the only person I knew that did that. I mean, I didn't know any high schoolers that lived on their own like Brooke apparently does, even though we've never seen her family. And Peyton certainly does.
It's crazy. And now Nathan, the one person that had two parents, is out on his own. They're like, we can't.
He's like, bye. I feel like we have a lot of things to talk about that perhaps we should do after we close this podcast over a glass of wine.
Mm.
But I'm down. We have some listener questions.
Let's do that.
And we have a question from Danielle that actually just made me giggle hard because I feel attacked, but also seen.
okay.
Danielle says, with this podcast, we've found out that Peyton can't really draw.
Shut up. Yes, I can.
Well, I don't know why anybody said this.
Well, because I didn't draw those pictures.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay. I'm going to edit Danielle's question. In this podcast, we found out Peyton didn't do her own drawings. And that Haley would be a bad tutor?
Yeah, because remember I was saying I don't have the patience and math is, I would not be a good math
Joy
tutor.
Having to deal with a dum-dum?
I could tutor you in history or English or spelling.
A punctuation tutor I think is important these days if you've ever been on Twitter, but that's a separate conversation.
There.
Danielle says, are Brooke's sewing skills real? Does Sophia know how to sew or make
I
sketches?
I don't know the answer to this either. Do
are
you?
Are Joy and Hillary... Guys, all I want is to know how to sew, and I don't know how.
Baby, we can teach you.
We can teach you.
However, I am the kind of person who will try something on and go, ugh, this would be great if this needs to be taken in, this needs to be hemmed, the sleeve should be this. Like, I can
You can design. You can sketch.
I love design. I can't sew or draw past a stick figure at all.
So no project runway for you.
I've seen you draw-ish.
I think you're being very
You have
kind.
Nice handwriting. That's kind. That's like drawing words.
Yes, also very kind. You can draw words, shapes. You know what I will say is I'm very good at spatial math, like trigonometry. If you need a person to unpack your home.
I don't even know what spatial
home,
math is.
Joy.
What the hell is
trigonometry,
that?
Trigonometry, geometry, spatial math. I can pack a suitcase. I'll get twice as much in it as any other person.
Yeah.
I can unpack and organize a house for you. I have a girlfriend who I was doing a job with who was very pregnant and miserably sick and moving. Her and her husband were moving. And that sweet angel that she's married to was working for a stint in New York at the time.
Did you pack this woman's whole house while you also have 37 other jobs?
Yeah.
You did. You did.
I packed up their whole apartment. And then every night after work for 3 hours every day until it was done, I would go over to their new apartment and I would unpack. And I would say, do you like this bowl here? And she would sit on the couch with a bucket to barf in. And eventually she would pass out and I would just be like, you know what? I'm going to keep going. And I unpacked their entire apartment. I hung all of their art. I organized like their light bulbs in little Tupperware containers on the shelf. Oh my God. I really am.
Monica. Spatial math.
Brooke Davis is Rachel. I'm kind of, if you put Rachel and Monica in a blender, that's me. I don't know what to say about it.
I remember going to your house and seeing like things in shadow boxes and like framed really nicely when I would just like nail to my wall. And I was like, oh, Soph does this like nice.
Oh yeah. It's
like,
another level.
Yeah.
I just went, this is how you know that I'm a crazy person. The last day in LA, I had one day in Los Angeles before I moved to Canada for 6 months. I took 4 years worth of stuff that had been accumulating in a bin in my garage that needed to be framed to the framer.
Of course you did.
And I was like, obviously, this is what I should do on my last day in LA, because I said to the lady, you have 6 months. I have no rush. You just frame all this whenever. I haven't had time. Here we are.
Here we are.
We had a great day together.
So if you could sew anything, like I remember being so impressed seeing you had vintage bathing suits framed in your house that I was like, oh, that's really cool. If you could sew anything, what would you sew? Like
suits.
Oh, yeah. You are so good. You love a suit.
I love a suit. I would love to be able, I want to be able to like cuff a jacket, hem a pant. Mm-hmm. I need a lesson. Joy, I need a lesson.
We can help you.
All right.
Girl, I was treasurer of Future Homemakers of America at Sterling Middle School in 1995.
Hillary Burton, you only get cuter to me.
It's so true.
I'm going to fight Jeffrey.
Did they have Future Homemakers of America in California or New Jersey? Or is that just like a Southern thing?
I've definitely heard of that in New Jersey, yes.
I did 4-H. I did like the full-blown agriculture because I was in California. Yeah. So they were like, learn to grow vegetables. They didn't care if we learned how to stitch anything.
We got you.
Maybe we just need a special live event just to learn how to sew.
Can you imagine? We're going to dress in old-timey dresses with bustles and high collars, cameo pins.
That's so good.
I love a cameo. Wait, what if on our next Drama Queens Live, we dress up in old-timey clothes and we learn how to make pajamas?
Pajamas? We're going to sew pajamas.
I'm down.
Yeah.
Because on our first one, we did pajamas. Guys, I'm just saying, we have a theme here and we should stick to it.
I'm going
to
crochet a neckline. Don't worry. All right, Danielle, thanks for your question.
Spin a wheel.
Sweet. We are going to spin our most likely two. What do we got? Oh, man. Wow.
Become president.
President of what? Most likely to become president, but like, of what?
Of what? Well, I mean, if we're saying the president, who's most likely to become the president? I guess.
Future Homemakers of America, I call dibs. However, yeah, who in the show was government-minded?
I know. Would it be Lisa? What was her character's name? Millie? I don't know. Was she in?
No, I feel like it's Gigi.
Oh, Gigi. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
On the show, I feel like it's Gigi.
Also, again, mouth. I mean, why does he fit every category?
He really does. He's perfect.
Mouth is really the answer. If all else fails, the answer is mouth. No, what about, Lindsay was like a book editor, published, you know, she worked for like a, but she was certainly the most adult and like together character that we'd had.
Why do I feel like, though, Lindsay would become like the president of the Guggenheim Museum?
Yes. That's, you know what I mean? Saying. Like,
yeah,
she would be the chic director of an art institute.
She was sophisticated and smart and savvy and like knew when to walk away and like, she was a grown up.
Yeah. What about Dan?
Oh, Christ. Do we really need a Dan president?
I mean, we've had one. I think we could. I just feel like it's possible. I feel like it's possible. That's all I'm saying.
It is possible. Anyway. Yeah.
Guys, I'm gonna finish my pad thai and my wine. Sorry, I've been eating this whole time, but this has been real fun. And we're so glad that you joined us all.
Yeah, thanks for having dinner with us. It's been an edamame night for me, friends. But yeah, what do we have next week? What do we got? 18? To wish impossible things? What happens next week?
To dream the impossible dream.
I actually don't know.
I don't know either. Because that was such a standalone episode. Where are we going? What's going to happen?
This episode didn't tease anything. It was kind of a standalone episode. Yeah.
Yeah. We're unresolved with Nikki and Jake. We're still a little wishy-washy on whether Lucas and Nathan are actually friends with each other or not. Peyton and Brooke's friendship is still up in the air.
It hangs in the balance.
And Nathan's got an apartment, which for sure he's going to throw a party in at some point soon.
Oh, my God, I can't wait. Oh, I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I'm not going to ruin it. But you guys, you're going to like it. I can't wait.
Watch the episode and tune in with us next week.
When I tell you, I have no idea. It's like, I never was on this show. That's how
I'm
much
with you, girl.
I have no
I'm
idea.
All right, we love you guys. We'll see you next week.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Don't forget to leave us a review. You can also follow us on Instagram at dramaqueensoth.
Or email us at dramaqueens@iheartradio.com.
See you next time.
We're all about that high school drama girl, drama girl. All about them high school queens. We'll take you for a ride in our comic girl.
Drama girl.
Cheering for the right team.
Drama queens, drama queens.
Smart girl, rough girl, fashion, but you're tough girl. You could sit with us, girl.
Drama queens, drama queens, drama queens. Drama, drama queens, drama queens.